Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode 197 of Unblocking Crypto. Al, good to see you.
Hey, good to see you, Jason. Another big week.
Yeah, so it sounds like the government shutdown could be coming to an end here, which will be nice. It should help kind of the uncertainty factor go away. And should, if you look at the fear and greed index for crypto, it's hit a six-month low down at like 21. So there is a lot of people very scared. And at the same time, the balance of Bitcoin on exchanges has also reached an all-time low. So there's a lot of stuff happening. Supply is tightening. Decline of available coin for trading is happening. So you would think, with the uncertainty about to be lifted, maybe we'll see some good things here in the near future.
Yeah, I am amazed by the amount of good news and bad price action. But to be fair, the price crashed to $100,000. Like, that's that could be worse.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's been a lot of people kind of predicting what's going to happen. And Arthur Hayes, always loved paying attention to him. He is calling Bitcoin to $1 million by 2028. Now, if you follow him, he always jokes that his predictions are pretty piss poor. But he does pretty much say that his argument hinges on the bet that government's more likely to pay for their expenses by issuing debt rather than making savings, as savings really means more taxes. And that the unpopular alternative for politicians who want to be reelected is savings, right? So they're most likely going to issue debt so they can get reelected again. So with more debt, more liquidity comes into play, and most of that funnels into Bitcoin. So he expects that to jump quite a bit, although Cathie Wood kind of came out, she reduced her forecast by 300K, which sounds like a lot, but it went from 1.5 million to 1.2 million by 2030. And it's mainly because she's seeing stablecoin adoption growing far faster than expected. And she was thinking that stablecoins are taking part of the role they thought Bitcoin would play. So yeah, kind of interesting to see some of that come out.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty safe bet to say that governments are going to print money rather than, you know, austerity measures taking place. I think if I had to guess, I think we just saw the strongest push for austerity that we'll ever see in our life, with Elon Musk putting together the Doge team for 120 days, finding a bunch of money that's just being thrown away, and then promptly leaving Washington, throwing his hands up and saying there's no hope for this, it'll never work, you know, and it's just garbage up there. And, you know, we made an effort there for a little bit, from January through April. It looked like we were going to try to straighten things up. And then it was like, nope, let's grow our way out of it. And grow our way out of it seems to mean tariff and then distribute $2,000 stimulus checks, which, I mean, it's got to be good for Bitcoin. The way that program is laid out, assuming it goes forward, everybody gets a check except for the high earners. And so last time we did this, Bitcoin collected a lot of stimulus checks, Bitcoin and crypto at large. So that's one little piece. Another one is Trump and Pulte talking about 50-year mortgages, which is, you know, the government's going to back those. So like I've talked about before, like quantitative easing doesn't have to be called quantitative easing, but the banks are the ones who actually print the money, right? So when you go get a loan, that isn't someone else's money that you're borrowing. It's new money. And if you're like, you know what, these 30-year mortgages aren't selling, so let's go to 50-year mortgages and see if we can push more mortgages out the door. That's more money, new money created and put into the ecosystem. Because for everybody that buys a house with new money, that new money finds its way to the seller. And then that seller is going to do something with it, right? So yeah, I think it's a pretty safe bet that Bitcoin's going to go up over a long period of time, because I don't see governments coming anywhere as close to what they came to as far as reducing a budget or kind of reducing the deficit and I don't see anybody even talking about reducing the overall national debt. So yeah, if assuming that everybody's right and that Bitcoin is a play on the demonetization or the debasing of the dollar, then yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was reading some about the tariffs, and I think that happened back in April. The first one happened back in April of 2020. $1,200. If you would have invested that in Bitcoin back then, you'd be sitting on gains of more than 1,400%. So I think if you had done all three of these stimulus checks in 20 and then two in 21, it would have been $3,200 that would have turned into 50K or something like that. So granted, Bitcoin was just over $6,000 back then, and now it's what, $105,000. So when all the money printing happens, you do see the price of Bitcoin go up quite a bit. And that's kind of one example of that happening.
Yeah, I have a friend who, it's like every time they send me any sort of stimulus check or anything, I just immediately buy Bitcoin. It's like yes, it's a good, you know, decision. If you're into Bitcoin, it's a good financial decision, but it's like, and it's more of a like a philosophical thing. Like they're going to debase the dollar, and I'm going to lever up against the dollar by buying Bitcoin with that. So yeah, I mean, there's going to be more and more people doing that, and the more people that do it, the better for Bitcoin. And there's new ways to get in. There were no ETFs back in the previous round of stimulus checks. So we'll see how much of those dollars Bitcoin can collect.
Yeah. Some of the other predictions that I was looking at a little bit too was Galaxy just lowered their end of year Bitcoin forecast from 185,000 to 120,000. And they cited concerns that Bitcoin is entering a maturity era of low volatility thanks to its convergence with traditional finance. And I kind of laughed and said, well, it just means there hasn't really been many money printed for a little while.
Well, you have that, and you have, you know, a bunch of people that are kind of liquidating some Bitcoin because they had 10,000 Bitcoin that they bought at $80 a piece. And it's like, you know what? We're just chewing through some pretty significant sell pressure from, you know, long-time holders. So eventually they are like, okay, I've got my long-term stack, and I've got, like, you know, my lifestyle chips now. So once those guys stop selling, you know, the buy pressure seems steady. So I think you'll see the price go up. I despite the fact that it's November, and despite the fact that, you know, Bitcoin's that price drop approached the bottom of this trading range we've been in since May, this 100 to 125,000 trading range, it only wicked below it. It didn't close below it. And then you got a ton of upside, and like financial institutions are still unlocking funds and still increasing their exposure to it. And, you know, if this is the end of the bull run and the highest we got was 125, and whatever it was, $2+ trillion market cap is as good as Bitcoin is going to get this round, and we're going to drop to 60. I just don't see it. Like, I feel like we're just making one of these little corrections in a bull run, and then we'll next leg up at some point. So
yeah, it's interesting. Some of the prediction markets, Myriad had their users placing a 26% chance on Bitcoin reaching another all-time high by the end of the year. So it definitely seems like the tempers have been changed a little bit on that. Although I did see JP Morgan came out and expects Bitcoin to climb to around 170K over the next 6 to 12 months. And it's mainly because of its volatility adjusted comparison to gold. So it's crazy to have JP Morgan be bullish and say they're bullish when they're usually saying, get out of crypto. And then they're the ones buying it left and right.
They're quietly buying it behind it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, if you're a gold holder, and especially it's the same as these Bitcoin whales. You've been in gold for 25 years and you've just been eating it, you know, like, ah, man, gold should go up. Money, you know, debasing the dollar and da da da. But there's, you know, there's a lot of paper gold and things like that. So, but you finally got your huge bump, and you've got like China and sovereign wealth funds buying. So they're not going to sell. So you know, I can see some of these people that have been in gold for a while, they're like, okay, now I've been in for 30 years. I finally am beating the S&P 500 over that time frame because of the last year. Time to get out a little bit. And the same conversation with my friend of mine about real estate. I'm like, real estate effectively doubled from like 2020, you know, something like that, some of these properties. And I'm like, do I think it's going to double again? No, maybe a long time away, but in that time, I've got to hold and I've got to pay property tax, insurance, and repairs. So, you know, I hit a lick in real estate. Do I just hold it, continue to hold all this stuff? I'm like, well, something else has got to be going on. The only problem is the only thing I see that's on sale right now is boomer small businesses, and I don't want to run them. I don't want to run a brick and mortar small business right now. So I, you know, I'm just kind of sitting. But you know, a lot of people aren't. A lot of people are gonna be like, man, all right, my real estate portfolio is up. But I mean, I compared my property taxes to my monthly rents, and some of my property taxes are taking 6 weeks in order to for the rent to pay the property tax. So I'm losing 10% of my revenue just to property tax before, you know, insurance is probably another couple of weeks. But the repairs are really what's crazy. If you can even get them done, they are super expensive. So if you're looking at, you know, your real estate holdings and you're evaluating them, then it's not good. Now, oddly, a lot of real estate investors don't evaluate their investment. They just, oh, let's check them in and, you know, everything's fine, blah, blah, blah. Look at how much it's worth, right? Once you have a lot of equity in it, you justify all the expenses to keep the property. But if you looked at your property over the last year, you're just kind of like flat. And it's, you know, I don't know that that's where you want to be as an investor. So some of these older people, man, they might have properties they've had for 20, 30 years. I mean, it's tough to, they're like, oh, I only paid $30,000 for this house. Now it's worth 120. Yeah, but if you bought anything with that 30,000, it would be worth 120. So, you know, if now you got to compare yourself from your 120 today going over for the next 5 years, you think that rinky dink, you know, 2-1 rental house is going to go from 150 or 200 to 300 to 400? So probably not. You know, the entry level price has to, you know, there's kind of an anchor there. So yeah, I mean, I think if you have spare cash from selling real estate, you're sick and tired of trying to find repair maintenance guys, or you got your gold stash and you're like, you know what, this gold's too large of an allocation in my portfolio. Right. Well, okay, I'll sell the gold and I'll buy 20%. I'll put back into Bitcoin, and because it's more volatile and responds better. So maybe I get the same return as my 100% of my gold with 20% of Bitcoin. Now I got 80% of those funds to deploy elsewhere. Hey, who cares? So I think you'll see some of these asset classes, some of this stuff will roll out. Maybe it doesn't go to Bitcoin in the short term, but I think it does in the long term.
Well, one of the things that we've been, I guess, waiting for is more regulation, unfortunately. And the House passed their Clarity Act version back in July, while the Senate Agricultural Committee just released their draft legislation, which is pretty much long awaited at this point. They're kind of an important group to get involved in this, since they have the authority on the CFTC, Commodity Futures Trading Commission. No surprise that they pretty much said that they wanted the CFTC to be the agency with jurisdiction over crypto. Now, the problem it seems to be is if the CFTC can handle it, because if you look at the SEC versus the CFTC, the SEC has a staff of about 4,200 people. The CFTC has a staff of about 543 people. So a big difference, but I guess we're at least moving forward with something. You know, there's talk about having things done by Thanksgiving and all that. There's no chance, I think, for that to happen, but at least they're still working on it at this point.
Yeah, whatever, man. I'm not getting excited about stuff until it, like, hey, look what we did. Look what we passed. It's like, okay, it's kind of like college football recruiting. Like, I'm not gonna pay attention to the stuff that's not gonna happen. Let me know when they sign a commitment letter, they're on the team.
So, speaking some other government news, Scott Bessent tweeted out that the U.S. Treasury and the IRS issued new guidance giving crypto exchange traded products a clear path to stake digital assets and share staking rewards with their retail investors. So that's kind of exciting. I mean, theoretically, this is going to really increase investor benefits, kind of boost some innovation, and really keep America as the global leader in digital asset and blockchain technology. So I think there's still a lot of question marks to be answered on this, but at least they're kind of headed in the right direction.
Yeah, I've made the same note, and I think that's going to be a kind of a big deal, because it can be crypto and staking, and traditional investors can just see appreciation and dividends. And they don't even have to figure out any of the proof of work, proof of stake, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, good for Ethereum, good for Solana, good for, you know, the kind of the larger proof of stakes that are getting ETFs. So, but yeah. That's a step in the right direction, and at least it's another like crypto forward move by the administration.
Yeah, the other big news that I saw that happened yesterday, which would have been November 10th, was that Square officially allowed all of their merchants to start accepting Bitcoin and have no processing fees until 2027. So they can receive Bitcoin to Bitcoin, Bitcoin to fiat, fiat to Bitcoin, fiat to fiat, and they had 4 million merchants for Square that were able to do that. And it's, I mean, they could accept the payments via QR code. They can hold the funds in Bitcoin. I mean, whatever they want to do. I think there's a setting to automatically convert up to 50% of their daily sales into Bitcoin. So it's really going to help small businesses diversify their savings and hedge against inflation, which is kind of cool. And if you look at Square in general, or Block, I guess Block is the parent company of Square. Block saw nearly $2 billion in Bitcoin revenue, which was about a third of all its total revenue. So, yeah, good stuff going on at Block and Square.
Yeah, I mean, it's good when a company like that with Jack Dorsey at the top comes out with stuff, because I'm like, this makes sense. Like, give people an opportunity to buy and sell in Bitcoin. Give people an opportunity to use Bitcoin rails to eliminate transaction fees, because I mean, 3% transaction fees, 3% off the top sucks. 3% off the top, sales tax, or yeah, sales tax if you're selling, state income tax, federal income tax. I mean, it's, if you could eliminate, you know, in Georgia, you, basically you're eliminating half of your state income tax liability by, you know, getting rid of that 2.9% fee on transactions. So, and if customers don't even really feel it, like if it's not something where they're having to make a big change. I mean, if they're going to US dollar, like fiat to fiat with Bitcoin rails between, what does grandma care if all she sees is dollars leaving her account and dollar or showing up on her credit card, and whether the merchant chooses to receive in Bitcoin or dollars doesn't matter to the seller, so to the buyer. And so it's got a cool opportunity. Square's in a lot of small businesses. So like, I think you can find out just who's in Bitcoin, man. I'm like kind of curious to see what shops will have those options available and even talk about it.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to see what happens. Another, some other big news that I saw too from another large company, Coinbase, they just announced they're going to be releasing a new platform for digital token offerings. They're going to have a new token sale set to commence every month. And the first one is going to be the Layer 1 network Monad. It'll be, I think, 7.5% of its total supply will be up for sale next week. And what Coinbase is going to do with this platform is they'll use an algorithm to decide the token allocations, with all the loyal buyers expected to receive higher token allocations. So kind of interesting to actually have some sort of, okay, we know who this person is that's buying it, rather than what usually happens with a lot of these allocations, that it's not a lot of KYC done in a lot of these places.
Right. Yeah. So like, this is cool. I mean, it's something for crypto folks, but that's like the grand scheme of things. I don't think somebody's going to go from their Bitcoin ETF to Coinbase token offering. You're getting excited about that, but it's, you know, it's like the difference between crypto and Bitcoin stuff.
Let's talk a little bit about stablecoin. So Looks on Chain reported their analytical platform. They just reported Tether issued another $1 billion of USDT. If you look at what Tether and Circle have done combined in the past month, they have issued just under $12 billion in stablecoins.
$12 billion in stablecoins. Tether's rocking, dude. And, you know, like you said, Cathie Wood talking about stablecoins absorbing some of the heat that they thought was coming for Bitcoin. I don't know how much of that I believe in. I think stablecoins growth is mostly based on countries that are losing control of their currency, or citizens of those countries just trying to find a little bit more stability in their purchasing power. And I don't know that they would have jumped straight to Bitcoin. So, you know, I realize like gone are the days where a Tether print means a Bitcoin price bump. And then all of the what if Tether is backed by nothing worries seem to be gone. But I feel like Tether can grow and it doesn't cannibalize Bitcoin exposure. I feel like those guys got to get to dollars before they jump to Bitcoin. I mean, I don't know, but I think good for Tether, man. The more I look at it and stuff, the more I kind of like what they did.
Yeah, Circle was also in the news too. So they just updated a policy that previously barred customers from using their USDC token to buy firearms, which, I mean, we're kind of fresh off the whole Chokepoint 2.0, and that they have, of course, Circle said that it may be used for the lawful purchase and sale of firearms as protected under the Second Amendment. So they also kind of came out and said, freedom cannot survive if your financial tools are turned against you and your Second Amendment rights. So I'm excited about that. I mean, it's not that I'm planning on buying firearms with USDC, but it is nice that it's not a restriction from these companies anymore to do things like that.
No, I think it's more of a signal that they could turn that switch on and off. Like maybe the next administration puts pressure on them to say, hey, look, firearms and illicit, whatever. You know, what they did this, right? They did it with the pornography, Chokepoint 1.0, pornography and medical marijuana establishments. So if they could be like, hey, turn it off, put pressure on them. Hey, Facebook, you know, don't let people talk about where the origin of COVID came from, squeeze that. So if the private companies can censor and the government can pressure them to censor, that's not great. So I good for now, but that's kind of one of the things you got to look out for. I mean, you know, it's like the Canadian trucker situation. Like, hey, you're saying something we don't like? Well, you don't get to spend your money. That sucks.
So ETFs, I know we talked a little bit about Bitwise's BSOL, a Solana ETF. They had inflows for the first 8 days straight. So over $500 million of inflows. During that same time, the Bitcoin ETFs shed about $2.1 billion in assets. So I think Solana had, or at least the BSOL ETF had a great first week. And plus, there's been kind of a lot of the ETFs in general have been shedding money amid all this market uncertainty. There is the Fed December rate cut coming. Hopefully it's a rate cut. I think the odds have dropped from 92% to 64%. So there's a little bit of a bearish sentiment, although Stephen Moran, the Fed governor, came out and said that he thinks a 50 basis point cut is appropriate and at least 25 at a minimum. So, but he also admitted that data could change his point of view if they get some new stuff in the near future. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that here in a month or so.
Yeah, I mean, they finally kind of broke and started dropping rates. So I think it's easier for them to continue these 25, 50 dip rate decreases once they break the first one. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm not expecting them to drop a whole lot because I think the economy and inflation is going to bite them. I mean, going grocery shopping is like pretty eye-opening right now. So whatever they say CPI is, you know, because they change, you know, the goalposts all the time, but people are feeling it. And if they start cranking down interest rates and more people are getting a lot of money into the system, inflation is going to come up and they're going to have to respond. So I think we're pretty close to the bottom of where they're going to find the Fed funds rate.
Quick break from the podcast to plug something I created. I've had the same conversation with a lot of people that were very curious about crypto. So if you are one of those ones that are curious about crypto, you want to know why it's growing, what it can do, how you can get involved, how you can protect yourself doing that, then this is for you. It's 43 plus videos that you can self-pace and you get access for forever. You get a 365-day money-back guarantee if you don't like it. The link is in the show notes or go to www.jasonexplainscrypto.com/curious. Back to the podcast.
During all this, with the ETFs kind of taking a hit, JP Morgan just came out and announced that they had a sharp increase in their holdings of the Bitcoin ETF, BlackRock's iBit, So there's a ton of institutional interest still. Their 13F filings show that they are holding just under 5.3 million shares of IBIT, which is a 64% increase from its previous disclosure of just over 3.2 million in June. So even with all this going on, there's still a lot more institutional interest, and 64% in quarter growth is pretty freaking impressive.
Yeah. No, I mean, even the Edward Jones guy was like, yeah, where you can get into IBIT and all that stuff now. I'm like, cool. I am not, you're not going to do it for me, but like, that's good for other people. You're coming up on the 2 year mark from when the ETFs were released.
Like, welcome to the game.
No kidding. That you could have gotten in at 36,000 and it's 100. Then we're at a huge dip to 100 right now.
Let's talk about strategy. They just bought some more Bitcoin, 487 Bitcoin for about $50 million. They now hold 641,692 Bitcoin. Used any of the at-the-money shares for their strategy stock. It was all the preferred stuff, right?
That's correct. Yeah. No common shares. A lot of the stretch product as it got, I think it got over $100 a share so they can sell it down and generate liquidity to buy Bitcoin. I think that's how that product works. And so they, 487 Bitcoin. Now they've got, their average buy price is $79,000 per Bitcoin. So if your cost basis is below 79,000, then you're relatively successful if you compare yourself to Strategy on your purchase points. So, congrats. Unfortunately for MicroStrategy, their daggum stock price is $250 a share. And their stock price is kind of struggling. Their MNAV is low and all that. So if Bitcoin price goes on a run and they can get their stock price back up, I could see them kind of bumping that MNAV back up to those 1.5, 1.6 numbers. And so they become like that levered play on Bitcoin. But right now they're delivering and its stock price is coming down hard.
Well, I did see that the big short seller, James Janus, he just put on X that he has unwound his trade on betting against Strategy. So the shorts on Strategy are out. I think he entered into it about a year ago and has determined that it's not worth the chance of doing anything there. If you look at Strategy, I think they're going to have about 715 million or so come Thursday that they can buy Bitcoin with. And that, if they do turn around next week and buy Bitcoin with $700+ million, it would be their largest purchase since July, which they did, I think, almost 2.5 billion back then. So it's been a lot of very small buys for quite a while.
Yeah. I mean, and if you're like me and you think 100,000 is like kind of the low end of this range, in this range, when we bounce out of the range, we don't bounce out to the downside. We're going to bounce to the upside. If you think that, if they can actually deploy that much cash at 100,000, yeah, I mean, their cost basis is going to go up, but 100,000 is a pretty good buy price. I mean, we've been doing this for a year and it's been the low for a year. Well, I think Michael's Saylor was talking about, if you buy Bitcoin, you need to have a 4 year time horizon. And if you buy Strategy, it needs to be a longer time horizon than that. I mean, if you're buying Strategy stock with a 4 year time horizon or more, cool. Buy more at 100. Like, we just rattled off a bunch of $1 million price predictions by fairly serious people inside of that 4 year range. So that's a 10X. I am not as optimistic about a 10X over a 4 year period. But 2.5x is freaking seems in the bag. And then if you're into Strategy and it's levered and we do get some price escalation and they increase their MNAV, that 2.5x increase in Bitcoin could be 3 or 4 in Strategy, plus selling covered calls is nice along the way. So there's my investment thesis for MicroStrategy.
Well, Metaplanet is trying to be the MicroStrategy of Asia. They just, I think, secured a $100 million loan using its crypto and collateral. So they hold just under 31,000 Bitcoin. Their goal still is 210,000 Bitcoin by 2027. So they're going to have to do something pretty crazy to get that high. But we'll see if it happens.
I mean, they can, there's crazy games out there, man. I mean, it's not like strategy and money planning have played every financing game that there will ever be. So they can do it. They just got to figure it out and have the gumption to do it. They've got some advantages for sure with the Japanese market and how their taxes work. So, you know, I'm pulling for Metaplanet.
Yeah, Strive, Vivek Ramaswamy's company just bought another $162 million in Bitcoin, and they surpassed Galaxy, became the 15th largest global corporate Bitcoin holder.
Yeah, I mean, remember when there weren't 15 global crypto holders and corporations and stuff? I mean, you know, it wasn't that long ago that it was that MicroStrategy announced that they were buying Bitcoin at the Bitcoin conference in like 2021 or 2020. So yeah, I mean, it's only 2025. So hey, we just bought another giant buy of Bitcoin and it put us into 15th. Like, that's pretty neat.
I mean, it's pretty much, if you hold double digits in Bitcoin, you're probably in the top 10 in terms of countries that hold Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, man, if you're just a person, getting to one Bitcoin is kind of tough right now. I mean, if you're like, you know what, I'm going to put 10% of my net worth into Bitcoin, then you need, bottom line, you got to have $1 million in net worth. And you got to have the guts to put $100,000 into Bitcoin. Like, that's a bit of a stretch if you haven't been into Bitcoin for a while and you're not really paying attention. You're just working and you know, building businesses or growing families or doing whatever. So, you know, I think for people that have their ears on and are paying attention to Bitcoin right now, it's like, man, just collecting Bitcoin, especially if you're young, like just getting to 0.1 Bitcoin matters in the grand scheme of like, you've got your day-to-day, you know, income stream coming in dollars from your job and you're just funneling whatever you can into Bitcoin. I mean, 10 grand is not impossible for a regular person to save. That's 0.1. So 0.2 is after that. I mean, I remember everybody I know that's into Bitcoin, it's like, got to get to one. Like back in the day, got to get to one Bitcoin. Okay, there. Got to get to two. Like, you know, just set one goal and get there. And then once you reach that peak, you can see the next peak. So, you know, I think as people think like that, corporations are going to think like that. Sovereign countries are going to think like that. So I think that's just the way it works.
Well, if you look at it, I mean, there's only going to be ever 21 million Bitcoin, and somewhere between 2 and 4 million of those are probably lost forever at this point. And then you have Strategy, they've locked up over 600,000 Bitcoin that no one's ever going to really get either. And that doesn't include what Michael Saylor has on the side of his interior. So you're looking at a lot of Bitcoin that isn't going to happen. So it's probably 15 million or so for everybody else. And a lot of that's still gone, but there's what, 9 million people in the world? So, I mean, there's more than 15 million millionaires just in the U.S. alone. So it's, getting one would be huge at this point.
Yeah, I think if you think of it like this, let's say there's 18 million Bitcoin out there for either trade or being held. So if you get to 0.18 Bitcoin, then you have a 1/100 millionth of the total share, total available Bitcoin. So no matter what happens, as long as Bitcoin price goes up, you're not getting diluted. You always have that fraction of the total market cap available to you. So, like, you know, that's not an unreasonable goal to get to, you know, close to 0.2 Bitcoin. And yeah, once you get to 0.1, you're like, you know what, it'd be cool to have 0.21. It's only 0.03 Bitcoin away. But, you know, it's like, that's just the way it works, man. And the hardest part is getting off of zero. And then once you're off zero, the hardest part is being like, okay, I think I'm good on Bitcoin. I think my Bitcoin allocation is fine. Like, hard to start, hard to stop. Like, that's kind of the way of Bitcoin investment.
Speaking of Bitcoin investments, going back to, so American Bitcoin, which is a Bitcoin accumulation infrastructure company, some I think are very into this. They added another 139 Bitcoin to their reserves. And they now hold, I think, 4,004 Bitcoin. They acquired it through a combination of mining operations and strategic market purchases. But what they did that was interesting, I think, is they released what they're calling Satoshis per share. So it's a transparency metric showing how much Bitcoin backs each share of stock. And it rose, I think, 3.35% over the past 12 days, and it's now 432 Satoshis per share. So it's kind of a cool thing that could be interesting if everybody else starts to do some of that now too.
Yeah, you know, the Bitcoin investment stuff is starting to define its own metrics. And I think the more you understand those, the better off you'll be in the long term. So maybe just start figuring it out now, put a little time in. And once you figure out Bitcoin enough, everything else gets easier and easier to learn. So it's not too hard to shift and pick up and kind of figure that stuff out.
I don't know if we're talking a lot about Bitcoin, but BitMine, which is more of the Ethereum treasury company, they just added over 110,000 Ethereum, which I think is about $389 million worth of Ethereum in the past week. They now have over 3.5 million ETH. I think it's valued somewhere around $1 billion. They also have 192 Bitcoin, which I think was kind of funny to see. They purchased 34% more ETH last week than the week prior. So yeah, I think Tom Lee said that the larger buy was really taking advantage of some of the depressed prices. And they now hold 2.9% of the ETH total supply with their goal of acquiring 5%. So interesting to see them continue to become a giant on the treasury scene too.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so the next logical step is somebody like Tom Lee saying, all right, I'm now on the board of this company and we're a Solana treasury company and we're going to take 5% of the Solana. I mean, it's, you know, it's like the logical next step. So yeah, I mean, I like Tom Lee. He still does a pretty good job of not just trying to shill Ethereum and talk Bitcoin. So he seems like he's done a pretty good job.
Now let's move into some of the world news. I saw Ireland and Coinbase Europe had an interesting interaction. So the Central Bank of Ireland imposed a $24.8 million fine on Coinbase Europe, apparently for breaching some anti-money laundering rules. And this is, Ireland is now the first enforcement action against a cryptocurrency company. Ireland's first, not first country to do this. So apparently there were some breaches in their transaction monitoring between 21 and 22, 30 million transactions valued at $176 billion, or 31% of all Coinbase Europe's transactions were not properly monitored. So it took about 3 years for Coinbase Europe to complete the retrospective monitoring that led to just over 2,700 suspicious transaction reports. And these reports included suspicions of money laundering, fraud, drug trafficking, all that kind of good stuff. Coinbase came out and said in a statement that they had coding errors in 5 of the 21 TMS scenarios that they used. So they had something to do with special character addresses were overlooked. So they corrected the errors, ran all those back and detected 185 transactions, which of course led to that 2,700 after they were ultimately looked at. So they haven't really said if there was any of those turned out to be criminal activity or not, but they fixed it and told Ireland about it. And Ireland said, okay, well, now we're going to find you.
No, I mean, Ireland seems to be a reasonable place to do business. You know, I think they'll get everything figured out. If you look at global giant companies, they hold a lot of money in Ireland and Ireland benefits from that. So I think they'll have their head on straight and they'll do some things to get more attractive to Bitcoin crypto companies.
Yeah, so Coinbase was also in the news in the UK, and they're launching a UK savings account product that I think is going to give the savings account for Coinbase will get 3.75% variable interest per day, paid daily. So not per day, paid daily, 3.75% per year, offering instant deposits and withdrawals, no minimum balance, no lockup period. And it'll also have some protections via the financial services compensation scheme that ensures their balances are covered up to about $112,000 if something fails. So that's kind of a big deal that Coinbase is giving that to some of the UK users. And I don't think many people here in the US are getting 3.75%.
I don't think so. So yeah, I mean, Coinbase, like I said, man, Coinbase is doing a lot of stuff. A lot of people don't like Coinbase, but they have really been a part of this accelerator pedal that's pushed the Bitcoin and crypto prices up. you know, they're the custody for a lot of these ETFs. They're, you know, they're making, moving and shaking, and so it's hard to get mad at them. They're trying a lot of stuff, and they got to play by the rules. They're too big. They're like, you know, thumb their nose at the rules and just do whatever they want. So if they can do it, then other companies can do it. So you should kind of be excited about it, because it opens the door for some smaller companies to try things too.
So the other thing that I saw too about Britain is they've announced they're going to roll out their stablecoin regulatory framework. And they said they're going to do it just as quickly as the US, according to one of the Bank of England officials, because they don't want to risk falling behind in the global race. And if you look at the financial services, we've talked about some of this before, but Britain's financial services sector generates over 40% of its national GDP. So yeah, they have to make it paramount to really safeguard the UK jobs and the economic development over there. They're going to unveil the proposed regime, I think on Monday, with the rules expected to be operational by the end of next year. One of the crazy parts to this is they're including these temporary caps on stablecoins. So £20,000 for individuals and 13 or 10 million pounds for businesses. There are going to be some exemptions for large crypto exchanges and institutional players. And they're talking about, this is the Bank of England saying that they have indicated they could lift the limits once the concerns about stablecoins' impact on bank deposits and mortgage availability ease. So pretty much they're saying, if you don't take away all our business, we might do this. And I'm skeptical of that happening. And when I'm kind of under the belief that more people are going to want to not have to be reliant on the Bank of England with their money and be able to kind of control it on their own.
Yeah. So what I heard was 40% of the UK's GDP is based on the sale of Kodak cameras. And they are starting to dabble in digital cameras, but they don't want that to cannibalize their Kodak camera sales. Like, hey guys, it's coming whether you do it or not. So, you know, don't be Kodak, like be Sony. I mean, you know, pivot a little bit, branch around, try some stuff. Like, it doesn't make sense. I mean, Canon did it, Nikon did it, Kodak didn't. So be careful. Be careful. Like, you can't play defense against this. Like, it's like, it doesn't work. You're going to get disrupted. Maybe it's not going to be 100% of your business, but if it disrupts 20% of your business, that's 8% of your GDP if you're not playing ball. So you can't afford that. You're in deep trouble if that happens to you. So, like, we've talked about this a bunch. Basically, the UK chopped down all of its trees to make boats. Like, they don't have enough trees to do stuff. They don't have coal. They don't, you know, like their island is basically resource strapped. They are heavily dependent on the financial industry. They're giving you another leg of the financial industry. You need to take it. It's not an option for the UK. They have to take it. However, UK's decision making right now is terrible. So this might be just freaking wipe them out here. So anyway, that's my thoughts on the UK.
Well, they're not the only one making that decision. So Canada just announced they're going to create a legal framework for the issuance and use of stable coins, which they announced in their 2025 budget here recently. They earmarked $10 million over 2 years for the Bank of Canada to administer the new rules. So great idea to give a federal bank the option to determine how stablecoins can and will be used. And you wonder what's going to happen with that as well.
Yeah. I mean, if you're being disrupted, you need to buy a small business that's disrupting your business. You don't need to pay, we're going to take the old vice president and we're going to turn him into the head of this new department. Like, you can't do it. You need to get, like, it doesn't work like that. You can't let the old guard isn't just going to flip a switch and be the new disruptor. So good luck. And you got all the biases of the people. I mean, the people that, here's $10 million. Take people that have been in the banking industry for 20 years and figure out stable coins. It's like the dumbest idea. So anyway, Canada's not doing great as far as decision making either. So look at this $10 million. $5 million of those dollars are just going to go straight into somebody's pockets anyway.
Speaking of bad decisions, let's jump back across the pond over to France. So their National Assembly just passed an amendment by a pretty narrow vote, 163 to 150, that is going to add crypto to a new unproductive wealth tax. So that unproductive wealth tax is alongside of gold, yachts, and classic cars, but it will impose a flat 1% annual tax on net wealth exceeding $2.2 million. I mean, if you look at right now, the there's a 30% tax on sale only for crypto, right? But now they're going to replace it with an annual wealth levy on holdings, whether or not they're sold. So this is, to me, going to cause a handful of issues for people wanting to build products and not be in France, because they're going to have to pay for some sort of tax, whether or not they sell the tokens or not. So I think that bill is going to head to the Senate here shortly, and then it'll have to have a second reading in the National Assembly after that. So I'm kind of intrigued to see what happens in France with this. And if that does happen, France has gone from initially one of these crypto powerhouses in Europe, and now it's like the last place you want to be if you're dealing anything with crypto.
Yeah, I mean, a holding cost on a digital asset is illogical. I mean, property taxes, while I disagree with them in a lot of ways, yeah, okay, I live in this house, I'm getting the services, the trash comes, the schools are open, here's some property tax to help pay for those things. Digital assets, why are we paying a holding tax? There's zero cost to, it doesn't cost the country anything for me to hold crypto. The only thing it costs them is I'm not spending that money somewhere else in the economy. But that's not something that you tax, right? So France, you already got a problem of being known for there's a lot of people that are being held for ransom to get their crypto. So you need to be a little more friendly. But this is like, I don't even know, maybe the fourth or fifth time Australia talked about it, like taxing unrealized gains. It's a stupid idea. Like, just you can't get that idea off of zero. So I put it on a list of stupid ideas. It's a growing list.
Yeah. Well, more government decisions just usually means more stupid ideas.
No kidding.
So next door to them, Spain, there's a little island called, so the Council of Tenerife, which oversees a technological and renewable energy institute, that they are attempting to sell the 97 Bitcoin they acquired back in 2012 for 10,000 euros. So they have now 1,000x their investment. They originally purchased it as part of an experiment, and now they're expecting all their proceeds to go towards funding additional research. So kind of impressive. So in 2012, to go out and spend 10,000 pounds or euros on Bitcoin is wild for any sort of government entity to do.
I mean, it is, but they've been holding it for 13 years and they don't realize we should keep holding this. There's other ways to get money to fund research. We can fund research through a gazillion different ways. But as soon as we sell this Bitcoin, the price is going to go up. But if they haven't ever sold, maybe they haven't learned that lesson. You know, people like us, like when we had to go into Bitcoin and then transfer to some crazy Chinese exchange to buy random altcoins and stuff, like, and you look back on that, you're like, oh, that was a terrible idea. Those trades cost me a lot if I just kept Bitcoins. Maybe they haven't seen or felt that, and it's not their money anyway. But yeah, there's countries have a ton of ways to get money to fund things in fiat. They don't have to sell Bitcoin to do it. Like you said, if you have double digit Bitcoin, you're in the top 10 for a country. Like, you're already there, guys. Fuck you. Yeah. You're winning. You know, why sell the stock of a company that's on the way up? So yeah, I can't really talk too much about this country. I've never heard of it or this situation. I haven't heard of it, but you know, like, you should have learned over the last 13 years, like, hey man, this stuff's pretty good, we should hold on to it.
Well, I mean, I think one of the reasons that people are going to struggle with a lot of this is they just don't understand it. And Argentina just had an announcement, so they're partnering with Binance, and I guess it's their capital city, Buenos Aires. The government there is going to work together with Binance to encourage sensible crypto adoption, and they want more citizens to experience crypto as a tool for empowerment. And I think that's something that's missing in a lot of places. There hasn't been that a tool for empowerment. We've talked about El Primo Bitcoin that El Salvador did, and I think there's some news there that they're shutting down the location in El Salvador and making it more global. And I think even Jack Dorsey just donated some money to help make it global, but they'll take that worldwide just to get more people understanding the power of Bitcoin and crypto.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It is like an understanding issue, but it is straight up free to understand Bitcoin. You don't need to invest. You don't need to sell your Bitcoin to make an investment to do research in Bitcoin. It's just out there. Like, and you can get there really, really quick. Don't sell your Bitcoin. Like, if you need to figure something out, your first step isn't, well, let's sell this thing so we can figure out if we should sell it. Like, that's bad logic. Like, don't do that. So we'll see if they can figure that out. But like, yeah, I mean, Mi Premier Bitcoin is great. You, high school kids, like freshmen in high school, can understand everything in that curriculum. So for me, I don't just send that up to your finance guy and let him figure it out. It takes no time at all.
Kazakhstan just announced they're going to be building a national reserve fund for cryptocurrency between $500 million and $1 billion, in part using some seized assets and some that are repatriated from abroad. So, I mean, I think they've been in the news quite a bit here for the past few months and not slowing down.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you didn't mention that they also have state mining operations that some of these coins come from. So, you know, they dabbled in like state-owned Bitcoin mining operations, which, you know, it's pretty smart. You know, they're it's kind of a hedge against the price of oil, really, because that's what keeps Kazakhstan rolling. And so you're talking about a pretty smart move. I mean, Dubai decided to go with tourism, and Kazakhstan is going with Bitcoin to hedge against oil pricing. The interesting thing I thought in that was they're using those seized assets and state mining operations to as a seed fund for this reserve, and they're not going to hold the coins in direct custody. They're going to buy ETFs and crypto companies. But yeah, we've talked about Kazakhstan a lot. I mean, they've been in the mining. They're like, if you look at the map of mining operations, Kazakhstan stands out as like, I've heard of this country. I didn't really actually know where it was, but it's, I don't know if it's a top 10 mining country. You know, Russia's up there and US and China and all these other things, but I think it's pretty high up there because of energy prices. And, you know, they 2 years ago, we talked about them doing a Bitcoin reserve, and it kind of, it was like a false start. Like, they just didn't get it off the ground. But you got to imagine, you know, over the last 2 years, that Bitcoin that they have seized and that they're collecting through mining, I mean, it's tripled. So now they, oh, okay, maybe we have something here. Like, let's see what we need to do, which, yeah, it's the same thing, man. They were off of zero. And they got through a cycle. So guess what you do? Like, okay, how do we prepare ourselves for the future? And other countries will do that, but they gotta buy more than zero.
Japan just had an announcement that the largest banks there have received approval for proof of concept trials of a yen-denominated stablecoin. They think it's going to roll out by March of 2026, which is pretty freaking quick. If you look at Japan, there's already been some fintech firms that have launched a yen-based stablecoin in recent months, although at a much smaller scale. So, yeah, it'll be impressive to see if Japan really tries to make a jump in this space too.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, how tough is it to start up a stablecoin anymore? Like, especially if you're a bank and you have reserves and there's some rules on how you need to be transparent about how you're backing and pegging your stablecoin. So, I think we'll see, like everything, but yeah, you know, you get some. The thing is, if you're not hiring government coders, and honestly, these are Japanese citizens. Their government workers are probably working their tails off. Like, that's a very different culture, man. So they might like March. I'm much more optimistic about them getting a stablecoin launched by March than the U.S. government doing anything by January.
Yeah, we were talking about Australia earlier and how some bad decisions have been made there. Well, there's some interesting news coming out. The country's top financial regulator, Australian Securities and Investments Commission, the chair there just said on Wednesday, like last Wednesday, the country must seize the opportunity or be left behind. when they're talking about distributed ledger technology transforming capital markets, and they're going to have to be using tokenization in the next phase of Australia's financial market development. So that's wild to hear that from somebody that is dealing with the financial markets in Australia, because they've been kind of the opposite of that, saying that they're pushing back as much as possible and it's not going to be good for Australia. And now they're saying they either have to do it or they're going to turn into pretty much nobody.
Hey, you know what? If that's your investment thesis, that if we don't act, then we're toast. Cool. Good investment thesis, right? Like, that's enough to get you to put a little program together to get something going. And the sooner you do it, the better off you are. And honestly, man, it's the same thing as talking to somebody who's got $5 million saying, hey, buy a Bitcoin. Like, what's the worst that's going to happen to you? If you're a dadgum country, like, okay, so drop $50 million into Bitcoin. What's the worst that's going to happen? Nothing. Zero consequence if Bitcoin crashes to 50 and stays there for 2 years. Like, people's understanding of risk is dumb, right? It's very frustrating. But at least we said something good about Australia. It's been a consistent Australia doesn't have their head on straight. So that's something.
So among the interesting news that I saw, so Ledger, one of the top crypto wallets, they're based in Paris. They've announced that they are preparing to raise some additional capital. They've been having a pretty good year. I think their revenues hit triple digit millions so far this year. But the CEO was saying he's either considering a listing in New York or a private funding round. And he's been spending a lot of time in New York and saying that there's an understanding that money's in New York today for crypto. It's nowhere else in the world. It's certainly not in Europe, which I thought was kind of hilarious to hear, because Europe was leading the crypto space and now they're kind of pushing it out almost. So hence why the US is trying to become the number one country out there for crypto and its focus moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, unless you didn't say there's money in New York for crypto, like New York's this crypto friendliness. That's not New York's money. New York's just the pipe at which the money flows. So yeah, no, I think it's fine. The U.S. needs to be more friendly. The U.S. needs to get more companies coming in. It needs to allocate. It needs to have guidelines so people can responsibly put a business together and understand what their costs are going to be. So that's good to hear that somebody's pro U.S. when it comes to putting a Bitcoin company together.
Yeah, it's in Wall Street for now. We'll see what happens with the new mayor of New York City. So,
yeah, well, you know, Texas started their own exchange, so there's options. Worst case scenario.
Some other interesting news that I saw. So Google Finance is in a couple of weeks going to show live prediction market data from Polymarket and Kalshi so that users can view probabilities of future events directly on their platform, which I think is amazing. I mean, we've always talked about the intelligence of the herd, right? So now these are going to be able to ask questions about future market events and really harness the power of the crowd. So that's going to be cool to see.
Yeah, no, the betting markets are interesting to watch. They seem to have an edge in some ways against other comparable things, like especially things like election polls and stuff like that. So the more integrated they get, I think the better off things are. Also, we're just approaching this wild gambling culture. Like, people are like, screw it, man, I can't buy a house. I might as well freaking bet on the game. It's like, what? I'm not saving up for a house because I can't buy one. So maybe I get lucky and hit a 6-game parlay and I can, you know, put a little away for a down payment that may or may not ever happen.
So Immunify, which is a blockchain security firm, they manage a lot of bug bounties across DeFi protocols. They were founded back in 2020. They secure more than 650 protocols, including a lot of the big ones you've heard of: Ethereum, Aave, Chainlink, Optimism. They've said they prevented more than $25 billion in potential losses and now protect $180 billion in crypto assets. They are planning to raise $5 million in a public scale sale on CoinList, which is interesting because they're going to offer about just under 4% of their total supply. They're doing it at a price that is 70% below the last private round, which is really interesting. And the goal is saying that they want to make it so they have a community of people that are a part of this moving forward. So exciting to see. Now, of course, the bad part is if you're in the US, Canada, China, UK, and other jurisdictions, you have no access to this. But I'm kind of intrigued to see if this helps create this community from DeFi and what they do from here.
Yeah, you know, it's worth a shot. Yes, go for it. I mean, selling at a discount is not something you see very much. So we'll see if it works. I mean, why not? I mean, if you're betting on the come line and this is a long-term game, you want to get as many people in as you can now. And then 10 years from now, those same people are just further investors. So give it a shot. I'm cool with it.
So we haven't really talked about Samurai Wallet in a while, but one of their developers just was sentenced to 5 years in prison last week after pleading guilty to conspiracy to operate an unlicensed money transmitter. He, of course, did that because the DOJ decided that they would drop the other money laundering charges. And then that way, money laundering is a much more serious and carries a longer jail sentence. So there's still a lot of controversy around that. And there's a lot of people arguing that money transmitting count was invalid because prosecuting software developers who don't control user funds is outside the meaning of the statute. So we've talked about some of this with Tornado Cash in the past. I mean, all this really means is you're starting to see a ton of interest now in the privacy coins. Things Zcash, we talked about them last week, but they jumped up 35% in a day last week. They're up like 1,700% in the last 3 months, and they're not the only ones. The Rail is doing well. Monero is doing well. There's a handful of other ones that are kind of jumping like crazy. So that is the new focus for everybody is, let me just have a privacy coin so I don't have to worry about everybody telling me what I can and can't do.
Yeah, I mean, I would have never guessed that we would see Zcash and Monero like get exciting again. They just seemed old and dead. Like, I think they were in the first 6 months I bought those. Like, that's crazy for an altcoin to stick around that long and be relevant. So, or stick around, be relevant. Be unrelevant, be relevant again. We haven't really seen that. Like, Solana was nothing, came up and stuck around. And as things drop down, to make a surge back up, I don't think we see that too much. So, interesting.
I was also reading a little bit about Hester Pierce, who's aka the crypto mom at the SEC, right? And I think what happened in the midterms got a lot of people scared here recently. She came out and said, use this time to build things that are valuable, that are good, that meet the needs of your fellow Americans, people across the world. If you build real things with real value for society, that will be the best way to make sure that good crypto regulation will last from administration to administration. So I think people are worried about in 3 years what the next administration is going to do with crypto. And so I think everybody's worried to try to get something in the books, right? And it's almost looking like it could take even longer than that at this point.
Yeah. No, I mean, you should be building things that are good for fellow citizens. I mean, if you build something that's not good for fellow citizens, then you build something that nobody wants. And guess what? You get to just look at it and enjoy it yourself. So, you know, she could have just said build stuff. But, you know, yeah, it's just a reminder. Things can change. If you're into Bitcoin and crypto and you need a reminder that things can go down, then you're not paying enough attention to your crypto and Bitcoin. I mean, the volatility is wild. I would imagine that volatility extends into politics.
And then the last thing that I had, so I was reading a little bit about Neal Stephenson. And if you don't know him, he's an author, kind of a sci-fi futuristic author. He wrote The Snow Crash back in 92, which predicted the metaverse. He wrote Diamond Age in 95, which predicted LLMs. He wrote Cryptonomicon in 99, which talked about digital currency, and then a handful of others. Well, he is now the co-founder of Namino One, which is a blockchain platform that hopes to provide the economic rails for a snow crash-like metaverse, which creators set their own terms. So I tried looking at it, and it looks somewhat interesting, but it was another thing that I didn't really want to worry about right now. But it's interesting that you have somebody like this that is still seeing value in creating another layer one that has a use case that I guess no one's thought of yet.
Yeah, I didn't spend too much time on the metaverse stuff last time that we talked about metaverse stuff, so I don't think I'm going to spend any time on the metaverse stuff this time that we're talking about the metaverse stuff.
Well, what else did I miss?
One thing, we talked about all the different companies and all the movements they're making. Robinhood said that they're considering a strategic Bitcoin reserve, so I think that's super logical. Just if it's their company and what they do, and I would expect them to consider it and be like, yeah, this makes sense. There was no reason for us to keep our reserves and solely
they keep looking at it every single time, but they're not sure whether they want to spend the money there or invest it and help grow Robinhood. So I'll be intrigued to see if they pull the trigger on anytime soon.
Yeah, but now they're in the S&P 500, so they have all this passive funds flow coming in through the sale of their stock. So I would say, like, okay, hey, look, we have money coming in. We can spend it. Also, we're basically a digital company. How much CapEx do we need to grow, unless you're just buying another company, in which case you're leveraged deal. So, there's only one way to acquire Bitcoin, that's to buy it. Like, there's plenty of ways to grow your business. And so, to me, if you're again, man, allocate 5%. It doesn't take a lot. And as far as you might even see more funds flow come in on the stock side, because you've got a Bitcoin play in addition to the S&P 500 play, in addition to operating profit. I mean, it's just another reason to get people to buy your stock.
Well, it's one of those things where, if you don't believe what you sell, right? I mean, they make a crap ton of money on selling crypto at this point. So if you don't think it's the future, then don't buy it. But if you do think it's the future, you're probably going to want to hold on to some of it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if Bitcoin crashes, you're losing some money on the operating side anyway. Like, you're already in bed with it. You might as well just stick your thumb in it, or put your hand up and say, hey, we hold Bitcoin on our balance sheet. And then the other one said this week, so a few years ago, you did a golf tournament, and I think it was the same price to buy like 200 umbrellas with Bitcoin logos as it was to buy 10. If you bought 10 in the United States, or you bought 200 in China or whatever.
It was about 30 to 200, yes. But yeah, close to that.
Right. And so, I ended up with a box of them, and we keep them. I hand them out from time to time to people that are even curious about Bitcoin. And I bring them to places, like my buddy had people over to do that, to watch the halving, this previous halving cycle. And no one ever takes the umbrellas. I mean, it's like, I still have like, I don't know, six of them. But it started raining when the car rider line at where I was picking up my kids. And I see my wife go to her van and pick up an umbrella and hand it to the lady that's directing traffic. So there's about 180 people that got to see the Bitcoin logo in extra time this week because the lady directed the car rider line at school, just a giant orange Bitcoin logo on a navy blue umbrella. So, I'm doing my part, like super Stormtrooper trooper style.
If you run out, let me know. I still have quite a few. So. I think we carry about six of them in the car at all times in case we need to use them. But
yeah, no, they're great umbrellas, and they look good, feel good. And now, some extra people saw it. So there's a few of them running around, and, there's a couple of them at some baseball tournaments every time somebody's trying to block the sun. So they're out there.
Nice. Awesome. Well, a lot we covered today. Still a lot of very positive momentum for Bitcoin, even though the price is down, but we'll see what happens over the next few weeks and how things transpire.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, price is down, but good news is up. And that's just a matter of time. Maybe it's a month or two, or maybe it's a year or two. It doesn't matter.
Yep. Awesome. We'll chat next week.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below, and hope to see you there.